said classic.
Yes.
Like, I think I say classic all the time, but this song is underrated classic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the guitar intro alone does it for me. Like, that just, like, welcomes me into hip life. Like, welcome to hip life. This should be, like, the welcome to hip life anthem.
I think this song really epitomizes that era of music. And Chiamo Kwame's verse alone is belongs in the Hip Life Hall of Fame, the museum, you know, for future for future generations to study.
Yo, everything about this song needs to be studied. But I think my favorite part, which is low key underrated, is the music video that goes along with this. So kids, anybody who's not watched this, go on YouTube, type in Achiame, AKYEAME. And the song is Masanaba, MASANABA. You won't be disappointed. Greatest video of all time. Greatest video of all time.
Oh, man. Those Hip Life videos of that era are just awesome.
Man, you could be anywhere in the world. Like, yes. you didn't need a video budget. Just need a good green screen.
That's more than good enough. Honestly, the product is the music, right? You could shoot a terrible music video. Even though a music video can, you know, promote a song, there's no substitute for good music.
Yeah. No, but this music video, I think, also epitomized the time, right? Because, like, it just takes me to, you know, the Acrobat parties, the, you know, the uncle. Like, that vibe is in that music
video.
Yeah.
You feel that.
You can't do a proper music video with this song.
Right.
It would lose the vibe because that wouldn't music be video same. Just... you know, just encompasses everything that they need.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely true. So, song and title.
Song Masanaba by Achiame, one of the most underrated duos, groups in all of Ghanaian music.
Yeah, honestly.
And Achiame Kwame is probably one of the most underrated musicians. Just his transition from this point into what he does now is just, and
to businessman, like, philanthropist,
man, almost 30 years in the industry.
Brilliant, man. And just recently also came out another hit with Kwame Eugene, right? Yeah, cool.
Yeah, and you could, and if you compare the verse, like, he's been able to go through all the eras of Ghanaian hip hop, and hip life and rap, and like, amazing. Kudos to him.
Those got skill.
Oh, he's got
okay. It. Before we get into this,
yes,
Achiame Kwame or Bravo? I'll take it there. Yes, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll take it there.
Okay, so for me, like, I guess if you're saying lyrically, or Bravo for sure.
Yeah.
Like if you look at it, but if you look at where Achiame Kwame has been able to transition and longevity, and what he's been able to adapt to. He's overtaken a Bravo for me because he's been able to sustain it longer and also transition into a new age that a Bravo just never could or hasn't.
I can't put anybody on the same level as a Bravo, so I have to.
Like, lyrically, a Bravo is insane, but I think the transformation that Achiame Kwame has done, I gotta give it to him.
I refuse to pretend to be fair, so. Oh my gosh.
Oh man. So Doc.
Yes, sir.
Phrase of the day. What's our phrase of the day today?
Phrase of the day. I went through a very difficult process to come up with a phrase of the day for today, but what I landed on was yo fur diapa and the piano. Which means we push the one who climbs the fruitful tree.
Alright. Now that is super interesting, and my mind is already tingling, so can't wait to unpack that later on.
Yes. Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Salome Kwame Radio. I go by Sal.
My name is Samuel Akwasi Boateng, and I go by Sam. Welcome to our podcast, Doctor.
Or an Embarrassment, where we profile the life of the immigrant child in the diaspora.
This is essentially the immigrant's guide to disappointing your parents. Mm-hmm. This season, we will be highlighting entrepreneurship.
Yes. Yeah, shout out to all you entrepreneurs out there. And in this episode, we're going to be chatting about what entrepreneurship means in our community, as well as, of course, an update on yours truly's, Dr. Sal, Commish Sam.
And embarrassment. And Commissioner Sam.
Dr. Ann Embarrassment.
where are they now?
Where are they now? Only God knows.
Update.
Yes. So, man, so let's get right into it, really. So I think, I guess we have to explore this. You know, what was the first encounter, you think, with the concept of entrepreneurship in your life?
Man, I think like most Ghanaian kids and most, especially most kids, I guess, grew up in Kumasi, my mom sold in the market, right? And my grandma sold in the market. So for me, I didn't really understand that as being entrepreneurship, but if I was to look back, that was my first encounter with entrepreneurship, right? Like the women in my family went to the market and sold, you know, goods and products.
Mm.
What about you?
Yeah, I think more or less the same for me. I mean, my mom, my biological paternal aunt, I call her my mom because she raised me.
Mm-hmm.
Man, she had so many businesses. I think she sold everything in the book. from gari and beans, from gabines to slippers to, I think she sold every food in the book. She was a hustler, man. She was always making it happen. You know, retail, like Ghana and retail is like, you know, goes hand in hand.
So I guess when you moved to Canada, and I guess let's transition that into like your move to Canada, what was your first, you know, encounter with entrepreneurship in Canada? Like who was the first person that you seen as an entrepreneur or kind of that's the first time?
I mean, I guess this wouldn't be exactly a definition of an entrepreneur, but my mother and father worked very hard for us to get our first home in Brampton, in Ontario. You know, and they really became very versed in the real estate market, you know, getting that home, being able to transition from a smaller home to a bigger home, which, I mean, it really schooled me to the game of real estate. I didn't know anything about it. You know what I mean? Like the concept that you can actually own a home was foreign. So really, that was the first time I saw entrepreneurship. And then, you know, when they relocated to Ghana and they started a farm.
Wow.
Yeah. And a huge farm. And that was really the first time I saw anybody in our family do something like that. I also saw my brother who's in crown molding. Set up his own business, and another brother who's in construction also set up his own business. So, and also my brother who's marketing also set up his own business. So it's like, it was like a ripple effect when people figured that they could actually do for self.
Mm.
Yeah. And how about you?
I think mine is more on a smaller scale. Like you remember like all those like Ghanaian parties and like, you know, adorns and stuff like that. The video man. At that time, in the early 2000s, like, those were like the first entrepreneurs that I knew here, right? Like, oh, Brad has his own business. What does he do? He makes videos, or he records things, right? So, like, that's, I didn't, like, I think for me, it was more like, you know, my parents, like my mom had sold in the market and stuff like that was entrepreneurship, but like, you've come to Canada, you don't want to struggle in that life anymore.
Right.
So you go to school, get a job. So the only other entrepreneurs that I kind of knew were more on like those sorts of service providers around like community events and stuff like that, right? Those, and it was always like, of course, it's not his full-time job. So you know that, you know, uncle is the videographer for every party.
Right, exactly.
He's got a full-time job that he's going to Monday to Friday. So that was just entrepreneurship for me. So entrepreneurship was really more of what was the side hustle for you to support the community.
Absolutely. I remember the Ghana Post guy. I mean, that guy was a hustler, man. And Ghanaian newspaper owners. Those guys are hustlers, man. Like, you know, they, of course, they had the same ads every year, every week in a week out for years. But these guys were hustlers, man. They were go-getters. Finding the news, chasing what's going on in the community, printing out the paper every week. That's not easy. So shout out to them. Shout out to all the entrepreneurs who made it happen.
No, absolutely. But I think you know, I think we as a community found ways to continue the hustle, right? Like everybody still tried to do the 9-to-5 thing, but I think the entrepreneurship spirit of selling and hustling was always there.
Yeah, yeah, that never went away. That's also very true.
And who would you consider, I guess, you know, growing up, like the first successful entrepreneur that you could remember? And maybe this will give a clue into what you define as success. But like, yeah, who was the first ever entrepreneur you looked at and you were like, man, this guy was successful in running his own business or running their own business?
Wow. I don't even know where to start. Who would I say? I think I honestly would have to say our friend Jude.
Oh, really? Oof.
Yeah, I think I would have to say that because he did this when we were back in university when we didn't even know the concept of entrepreneurship and setting up business. And he was in real estate buying, selling. We were like, what the heck is he doing? Wow. Next thing you know, he's in the newspapers. He's everywhere. He's on billboards, on buses, you know, and we're actually watching this happen in real time. So I think in our age group, in our age bracket, I would have to say him. That's what comes to mind. And yourself?
Yeah, for me, I guess I'll take it a little even back to like a couple generations like before us, right? Like when I was growing up in church, the first successful like entrepreneur that I was like, oh wow, this is just not a side hobby, was like some man who set up a grocery store, like a Ghanaian grocery store, and he was able to quit his full time job. So for me at that time, I was like, oh man, he's successful. He quit his job and he has like a huge facility and was like a big man.
Yeah.
Had a brand new car.
You know?
So for me, that was like, okay, it's not a side hustle anymore.
Right.
This man is successful.
This is the hustle.
This is the hustle. Like he's found his way. And that was super interesting to me. And I guess, you know, to bring it back to like, how do we explore, you know, what it means to be a successful entrepreneur? And for me, it was just as simple as the ability to quit your full-time job. Because I always looked in the community, like everybody that was working because they had to. They weren't working in the field that they wanted to.
Right.
They were just taking any job to, you know, fend for the family and build the life for their kids. So when I seen that somebody was able to quit that and start their own thing full-time, I was like, man, this guy's
successful. Became real.
But what about you in terms of like, when did you act, how do you, you know, define success for entrepreneurs?
Honestly, I see it. You know, I think we've spoken about this. We're very much risk averse. We're about comfort and safety because we know where we come from. We're here to build a better life, not necessarily to struggle. And so, you know, in the early days of entrepreneurship, you can struggle. That's a possibility, you know what I mean? And it comes at risk. Whether it's measured or not, that comes with a process. So, I mean, I think success to me means being able to push what you love, push a product, be able to market that product and have that be able to give you a comfortable living, a way to make a living without having to really answer to anybody. You can just answer to yourself. You know, however large the income is, that's really up to you and what you decide. That's your say, but it is money that you make on your terms when you want. And so to me, that really is success.
No, how do you see it? I feel the same way, but I think, you know, the biggest driver is just being able to do something you love full time.
Yeah.
That's where I call it success.
That's
right?
Priceless.
So, as you said, right? The income could be high, whatever, but if you're able to do that full time, you love that and create a living out of that, I think you found your success in your bubble, right?
Mm.
And I think an underrated entrepreneurship
perfection equation
avenue. You know, yes, that is the equation, right?
That we're all looking
for. But an entrepreneur avenue that we I think always overlooked was churches in our community. Like there were so many pastors who started their own
church
hustle and their own church. And that was the entrepreneur in them.
Oh, this is true. You know, hey, listen, the Bible is not anti-business. So, I mean, the church is not in and of itself as a business, but, you know, starting a church in their own way was using what they love to be able to make a living for God. You know what I mean? Absolutely. In their own way. So listen, I can't hate on them, but we appreciate that. Shout out to all the pastors who made it happen.
Absolutely. They found the perfect, you know, the perfect equation.
Yes.
Of finding their spirituality, their entrepreneurship skills, and, you know, making some money out of it as well, right? So
yeah. With all this. But
I guess now with you know, what does it really mean? Are we kind of seeing a rise in entrepreneurship in our community now, like as opposed to, you know, when we were growing up, you know, what we were always fed, right? Go to school, do this. Like, are we seeing a transition in our community?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very different from what it was before. Like, I see a lot of hustlers in our community. I mean, the concept of being able to interview all these entrepreneurs that we have this season, I mean, yeah, that was unheard of 10 years ago even. You know, I feel like maybe in some ways the pandemic has accelerated that, because it forced people to get out of the comfort zone and do for self.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Go out and hustle. So I absolutely see the needle shift in a big way. And I appreciate seeing that, because people have realized, listen, nobody's going to feed you. You got to fend for self. You got to do for self. And you can do it while also pursuing your passions. And so, definitely, I see a rise. I don't know how it comes from your angle, how you see it, but
I think it's changed drastically, and I think it's been more accepted now, right? So like, but I think there's still a caveat to it, right? There's still some entrepreneurs that we accept more than others, right? So we accept those entrepreneurs that have gone to school, that have degrees, and have started, I would say, glamorous, you know, businesses, right? So right. Have, you know, law firm and stuff like that, or they're a doctor and have their own practice. You know,
that's true.
Even on the, you know, real estate side, it's still hit and miss, right? Like we still don't value all of them the same. You know, if they're doing, you know, big developments and we're like, oh yeah, he's made it.
Right.
But if they're, you know, just buying and being a real estate agent, we're kind of like, ah, you know. So I think there's still stigmatization within it, but I think we're more open to the idea of working for ourselves and creating things on our own.
Right.
And I think we can do better. And I think what is hindering us is creating a place where our community supports entrepreneurs, right? In terms of like, we're going to buy your products because you're part of our community, and we're going to champion you. We're going to, you know,
stop asking for discounts.
Stop asking for discounts. Stop
paying a person
discounts.
What they're worth.
Absolutely. Right. And I think that's the biggest thing, right? Until we as a community start embracing those services and lifting those individuals up, then we can have more entrepreneurs drive from there.
Yeah, 100% agreed. So in that vein, would you say entrepreneurship is always a good thing?
No, it's not always a good thing. I think we've come to an age where everybody is a boss and a CEO. And like, I know people who are in university, and if you look at their resume, they're CEO of this company, they're CEO of this corporation that they incorporated and started. And I'm like, that's all well and good, but we also have to have the mindset of like, why do you want to be an entrepreneur? What value are you providing? Mm-hmm. What skills do you actually have that people want to buy aside from, you
know, wearing the title of entrepreneur?
Wearing the title of entrepreneur.
CEO or all that.
Yeah, I think entrepreneur like should be like, and for me, maybe I am wrong, but I look at it from, you gain a lot of experience in the field that you're in.
Right.
You've gained a lot of contacts and you have a passion for it. And then you create a niche for yourself, and you're able to take your apprenticeship of working under somebody or working for somebody into creating your own thing.
Right.
Not just, you know, what do you want to be when I want to be a boss? So I'm never going to work for anybody. Right. And that's what I see a lot in our generation. Like a lot of people are fixated on being the boss at all costs. So I'm not going
I'm
not going to work underneath anybody.
Absolutely. Without fully understanding their value and what they offer, you know, without self-awareness.
But what do you think? Do you think entrepreneurship is always good, or I guess is better? Okay.
Yes. And here's why. I think it's always a good thing because this system is designed to create employees out of us. Mm-hmm. It's always good in the sense that your goal, everybody's goal should be to own and to do for self, to be able to employ others. Okay. Right? So in and of itself, I think in and of itself is always good because you learn what it means to be on the other side. You learn what it means to own a business. You learn how, what it means to put wheels in motion, not just see a move.
Okay.
And so I think it is for on a self-development bit, as a person, it really profoundly changes you because you're now looking at something from an angle you've never seen before. As a contributor to the economy, you're now being able to maybe employ other people, right, to contribute to the economy. So you're changing the economy. You're putting economy on its head. The number one driver of the economy is small businesses.
Mm.
And if you're able to, you know, fall into that, you fall into a whole new class, you fall into a whole new world, and personally it changes you because you know what it takes.
I agree to some extent, but I also think that not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur. And yeah. you need to know what your limitations are. And I think we fall into this trap of entrepreneurship being the gold standard of the goal.
Yes.
But there's so many other ways that you can, you know, create employment, right? So for example, me and you,
yes.
We may see like, hey, Kwame has the drive to be an entrepreneur, to run a business. And me, I don't like that risk, but I can invest in you. And I can invest in your business and have mm-hmm. you be the entrepreneur that runs that business.
Right.
And my investments make me money, as opposed to trying to create a business, compete with you, and I'm totally not good at this.
Right.
And now I just blew a bunch of money when I could
have. Well, I mean, one could argue your investment in and of itself is a mode of entrepreneurship because you're putting money to work, right?
I'm so you're putting money to work, but I guess money to work for you.
So that in and of itself is business.
I guess it depends how we define entrepreneurship, right? Because for me, I define entrepreneurship as you are the main driver and leader of this business, and you are running the operations.
Okay, fair enough.
That's how I define it, right? So there's a lot of people who say I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm like, no, you're not. You're just a sales rep for a multinational, you know, digital company that's giving you some tools to set up a platform. That's a different discussion on its own. But I think so. Where I look at it as is, for me, at times, right, there's certain industries that I'm like, I know that I don't have the requisite skills to be in.
Right.
It would make more sense for me to, let's say, work my 9-to-5, save up a couple of dollars, and invest in, you know, Kwame opening up his, you know, clinic, and say, listen, Kwame, I got $50,000 for you. I want to partner with you and do this. Go ahead. I'll just check. You know, I'll read the investor quarterly statements every month to see how we're doing.
Yeah, but see, investorship in and of itself is foreign to us. That isn't something, we don't know markets. We just started speaking the language of markets.
Absolutely.
We didn't even fully understand that.
And that's where I want us to get to and stop, because right now we've gotten to the entrepreneurship path, right?
Yes.
And we've gotten stuck there. So everybody feels like they have to open their own mm-hmm, business mm-hmm. or have to incorporate something in order to legitimize that their hustle.
Right.
Where your hustle could be, you know what? I own no corporations. I've opened no corporations.
Right.
But I have 30 holdings in, you know, 30 different companies
that have been
opened by my friends.
So your take is that
manage my portfolio.
Yeah. Your take is that there are different ways to make money work.
Absolutely. And you need to find what your skill is. If your skill is not the day-to-day pounded out, find somebody who's good at the day-to-day pounded out and invest a small, I'm not saying invest all your money into them, invest small and then increase it if they do well, but you know, invest in different people and see how that grows. And I think that when we get to that level as a community, that's how we'll build more entrepreneurs, because there's a bunch of entrepreneurs that don't have capital.
Right.
They have the hustle. They have the drive.
Right.
They don't have the capital. And there's a bunch of people who have the capital.
Who have the capital, but don't necessarily have that entrepreneurship. Okay.
Be entrepreneurs or are good at entrepreneurs. So they'll start a business and blow through their capital within the next 2 years.
I hear you.
Where they could have invested half of that into somebody and it would have blown up.
Fair enough. Touche. Do you think our culture is ready? Do you think we're ready to accommodate the
spirit of entrepreneurship? I don't think we are, because we're still, as you mentioned, right? We're not even talking about like the markets and investing. We're terrified of taking big risk, and we don't trust one another. I'm terrified to give Kwame $25,000 to start a business that I'm not going to be there day to day to watch you over your shoulders to say, this meeting that you're taking for our business, is it, you know, yielding results? Or are you wasting my time? Kwame, I'm calling you at 2 p.m. Why are you on Facebook? I invested $25,000 in you. What's going on, right? Like, we haven't built that trust as a community to say that we trust each other to the extent of, you know, I know that he's a good at what he does, what his craft is. He has a great idea, and I'm going to propel him with a little bit of cash and wait that in there. And I guess, what do you think? Do you think we're ready, and how can we get ready if we're not?
I in many ways agree with you. I think a lot of times, you know, we've seen other communities do well when they band together. And that level of togetherness, I don't think we've seen. You know, it's been more competitive drive with one another rather than, you know, a drive together and compete with others. So rather than, you know, this crab bucket theory climbing up on the backs of another, I think we definitely need to move as a unit and see a level of unity and be able to build really together so that we can all win together. So, I mean, I think the mentality is there. I think we can get there, but I think we need to do some work.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, as you said, banding together, and this season we've interviewed some amazing entrepreneurs and with some
incredible
cool companies,
incredible
cool ideas.
I've been so impressed.
A lot of them, to even scale, have been doing it on their own.
Yeah.
And what would be cool as a community is if we developed some sort of fund, right, where we could invest in, you know, our entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
And dump money into there. And I think that is the next step. When I know that as a community, we've taken the next step from actually accepting entrepreneurs.
I agree.
That we have our own, because I don't know of any.
Let's start working on that.
Yeah, I don't know of any venture capitalist fund, especially within our community, that's funding any of this. And I know that there's a lot of money in our community because there's a lot of people that's doing a lot of stuff.
Absolutely.
Whether successful or non-successful, they're pumping money into this. Yes. And I wish that's the next level that we need to get to if we want to actually take it to the next level.
Yeah, let no one tell you we don't have money. We just don't know how to use the money.
So if you're out there and you have money and you like some of these ideas, some of these entrepreneurs that we've shared this season, hit us up and we will connect the dots. Right? I think that's how we started.
Let's start please. Sign the checks.
And let's start investing
Sign the checks.
In ourselves and propelling some of these entrepreneurs to the next level.
Yes, let's get it done.
All right. So
all you millionaires out there.
Absolutely. Let's, you know, I think there's more millionaires in our community than we like to actually talk about. And I think it's time
that
we actually get out of the shadows and start pushing some of these great ideas and some of these great entrepreneurs. And also to the entrepreneurs, don't be afraid to seek funding and seek investments and share your ideas to the community and say, hey, listen, community, I want you to invest in our business because we're going places, right? And I think that's where we need to get to.
Yes, sir.
So Kwame, on that note, in terms of getting somewhere as a community, we wanted to take this episode to also give an update on where we are. So to the Doctor and Embarrassment family, I know we've had tons of questions following our episodes in season two. Where are we now? Like, have we progressed in our career? Have we stalled in our careers? So we thought it'd be a great opportunity to use this episode
Yes.
provide you an update where we are, right?
Absolutely. Let's do it. Kamish, so, we'll start with you. I mean,
you want to start with me?
All right. Listen, you're the boss. I'm just a squirrel here.
So the doctor is going to ask me what I'm doing now. So
yes, please, Kamish, let us know.
All right. So my current title right now is actually consul. And
console.
Trade commission.
Excuse me.
Console. So okay. I've got up a little bit of a level.
Moving on up.
I haven't moved up that late, but I've actually
finally got a piece of that pie.
I would say I've progressed in my career and I'm doing slightly a little bit something different. I'm actually working at the consulate general in Shanghai, the Canadian consulate in Shanghai, as a consul and trade commissioner. Working on the science and technology file. It's been an interesting change since our last episode, since we last touched base, that things have progressed, and the embarrassment has taken its embarrassment all the way to the Far East, all the way to China to embarrass themselves.
Far East movement.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Wow, congratulations. That's big. This is Tell people what it is, man. You're going to be working in the office of the ambassador. Is that correct?
So not the ambassador, but we have a head of mission. So it's a consulate. So the ambassador sits in Beijing, but Shanghai is one of the biggest offices that the Canadian mission has in China. Shanghai is really the commercial hub, so a lot of the trade activities, most of the trade happens in Shanghai. Most of the products actually come through the port of Shanghai. So it's a busy office. It's a big office, and it's a priority office for the Canadian government. So I'm pleased and very happy that I have the opportunity to go and learn and actually apply my trade in such an interesting and dynamic field and office.
Many congratulations, my brother. You deserve it.
No, thank you. And it's been a long time coming, but I think it's been something that I would say was a little bit unexpected, but all the same, as they say, luck is preparation meeting opportunity.
Meets opportunity, right? Absolutely.
So made sure that I was preparing and preparing myself, and the opportunity met itself. Now I, before we go the rabbit hole of where I'm at, and I think that's where is the good doc now?
Wow. I think last time we spoke, I was a pediatric resident.
Yes.
Right now, I am a pediatrician. I've completed my residency.
Wow.
Yeah. So you got questions with your kids, call me. It just comes not free. You just got to pay me now.
You got to pay me now. So right now, he's no longer a doctor in trade. He's a doctor. He's done his residency.
Yes.
And so where are you?
I am currently doing what we call a fellowship. So when you finish residency, you can further specialize and do a fellowship. I am doing a fellowship out of the Ontario Shores Hospital for Mental Health.
Wow.
Working with adolescents and providing medical care for them. And in about a year, I hope to set up my practice and be able to work in a GTA. So you can bring all your children, everybody out there, bring all your children to me. And I'll provide them good medical care.
Wow. See doctor's already on his entrepreneur tip. already advertising for his startup.
You got to, man. You got to hustle. Yeah, but honestly, man. I this is sometimes it's so surreal. I have to pinch myself because this is my dream job. Somebody ever asked me, what would you do? I think the dream job is something you would do for free, provided that you had a way to live a life. You would do it for free because of the passion, out of the goodness of your heart. And me being a pediatrician has always just been a dream of mine. I love working with children. And so it's so surreal. I have to pinch myself like this is actually happening. I actually am a pediatrician. And it's...
Man. It's come true. Super proud of you. And you're a testament that, dreams do come true.
Yeah.
And thank you. Also that you're never too late to follow your dreams.
Absolutely.
Right? I think that's the one thing that I take... from you all the time as a motivation in my career and in my life in general is that hey, if you have a dream out there, never ever let it die because you think you're too old or you think you're established yourself in another field.
Right.
If that dream and passion is still there, man, go for it. And I'm so proud of you.
Go for it. Thank you so much.
How did this fellowship, what was the process in terms of, from a resident to fellowship, what does that process entail? Just so people get a sneak peek that it's not just as soon as they hand you your certificate and say, hey, you're a resident.
All right, you go to work.
You go to work, right? How did that come about?
I mean, technically, I could have gone to work. Because once you finish residency, you're a physician, right? Yeah. So I could have gone and started primary care. But what I wanted to do was get further training because I like mental health. It's always been something I've been very passionate about. And it's been something that in our community, I think we've neglected for so long because there's been so many taboos surrounding mental health. So basically, I decided to pursue a fellowship because I wanted to further learn what it's like to care for people with mental illness, especially adolescents. I have a soft spot for adolescents because I know the difficulty that they can face. And so I wanted to learn more about mental health, specifically regarding adolescents, how to manage it, so that when I do start practicing, I can actually see adolescents. Because, you know, I like talking to them, finding out their story, the difficulties they're going through, helping them see things from a different perspective. And so I wanted to better learn how to deal with that. And so that's how this fellowship came about. And that's why I decided to apply and pursue it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, congrats. And super proud of you. And
thank you.
I think you're a motivation to the community, not just in terms of, you followed your dreams, but like you're doing big things. Like,
yeah, thank you.
I don't think I know a doctor in this area, in this space. And I can confidently say that now I know one, and kind of you're doing big things. So super proud of you on that front.
Thank you, sir. And you haven't talked about how you came to go all the way to the Far East to meet Xi Jinping. So,
man, it's you know, I think for me, just working in my role as a trade commissioner here in Canada, being based in Canada, just working hard and that opened the doors in terms of an opportunity and kind of a need, and just applied and kind of went through that process. It wasn't guaranteed. Being in my position as a trade commissioner, I'm not what they would say kind of a foreign service worker, where I would automatically be in the rotation to do something like this.
Right.
Also, as you can tell, I don't speak Mandarin as of yet. So that was another knock against me.
Listen, that's my girl, Rosetta Stone. I'm telling you, man. Like that's.
But I think just what I wanted to do. I think I said in my career plan that I wanted to do at least one international posting, just to get the feeling of working overseas,
right?
And taking my my work, because right now
talents all the way to the Far East.
I'm telling you, right? Like, but just working with companies here, domestically, and then helping them build international strategies. I wanted to that experience of the other side, right? Where once they go to the market, what sorts of supports are they getting, right?
Yeah.
And so I targeted that, and I actively kind of sought that and talked to, and I've had some great mentors that were always looking out for me and saying, hey, these opportunities are there. This is what you need to do. This is who you need to talk to.
Yeah.
And I think when you have those sorts of mentors and kind of, my past director, who was just an amazing person, amazing lady, amazing, director, and just amazing person to work
with. Shout out to you, Madam Director. I don't know your name, but you must be an awesome lady.
I know. I haven't gotten her consent. I won't blow up her name.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yet,
But she knows who she is. But I just want to say, like, she's just been amazing, just in terms of just seeing the potential in everybody, and not just me, but like I could see our whole office, that everybody who wanted, has potential to do other stuff. She was always encouraging.
Yeah.
And she really, 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 really helped me position myself for this. And
it's amazing. And it's incredible.
Role. Yeah. And I think that's where I see the benefit for, the next generation of me always, opening the doors for other people, because I've had it done for me. So I think that's how I got into kind of this next step, is just great mentorship, being open, and then just being open to a big change. Big shout out to my wife as well for
my
family for agreeing to leave their comforts to
Mrs. Butting. Listen, God bless you. God bless you. Listen, I would never be able to even think about pursuing my dream without my wife, without the women that push us, that support us. I can't imagine where I'd be You know what I mean? Like, it's so surreal when you have somebody who's willing literally to put their life on hold and say, okay, I'm going to help support you to chase your dream. Not everybody has that privilege. Absolutely. So it's definitely shout out to your wife. You know, God bless these wives of ours for helping us through this journey.
Absolutely, man. And yeah, big shout out to all the couples out there, wives, yes, husbands, yes, that truly support the dreams
and oftentimes even put their partner
their dreams on hold, mm-hmm, or on, you know, on a back burner just to support. And I think finding that right partner and that right teammate,
yeah,
means so much, man. So
it's everything, bro. It's everything. The person you marry literally can make or break you,
man. Absolutely. And you don't, I think you take it for granted until you get married and you're kind of trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, if I had married somebody who was just like, to this dream or no to doing this,
and it's funny, 9 out of 10 people would say, no, listen, this is too much. China, we don't even speak Mandarin.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Talking about, we go all the way out there, we don't have any family.
Man.
Like, there are a million reasons to say no. She found absolutely the one reason she to say yes. Wrong.
Yeah, and it's solely really just, I believe in my husband and I want to help him.
That's incredible.
Achieve his goal. And that's incredible. And that's
loyal. Not everybody does that. That is a special human being. So, absolutely. Hey, listen. Shout out to you, Madam Boateng.
Yeah.
So tell yes. Tell us about some setbacks that you faced so far in sort of elevating yourself to this new height.
I think the biggest setback is, you know, on the language side. Like, I'm still struggling to perfect my French. Je parle un peu. That's all I can do. And I'm done. But like, it's been tough, man. Just being an adult trying to learn a new language.
I know.
But also subconsciously, when you're as eloquent as I am in the
English language
and you speak so lovely.
Right. Why would you want to speak anything else?
You want to speak as eloquently in any other language you speak to.
Exactly.
As you do in English.
Yes.
It is the most frustrating thing ever.
It is. I feel
So that's been one big setback that I think I've been struggling with. And working towards, and now I'm adding another language that I want to pursue, which is Mandarin, for this position that I'm working on right now. So I think that's just one of the biggest things that I've been kind of navigating as kind of one of the biggest setbacks since the last time we chatted. Wow. What about yourself? What is one setback?
Honestly, I haven't had, I wouldn't say I've had any setbacks, you know, in this transition. I think moving from the States, coming home and trying to reintegrate into family life, trying to be a dad again, husband, because I've been away so long. So I think that's in itself is a challenge. Trying to meet new people at a new hospital is never easy. So that's the only challenge really I've had, I feel like.
So Doc, what setbacks have you faced since, you know, the last time we talked in 3-year journey so far?
Wow, I don't think I've had any significant setbacks per se, but I think the transition from moving to the U.S., coming back home, becoming a dad again, becoming a husband again full time, you know, being physically present, I think that's in and of itself has been a transition on its own, and a challenge. Because it's different when you're away, you know, FaceTime is not the same as, you know, when you're actually here and hands-on and doing everything. And then, you know, you're working, you're going through the motions of actually traveling to work back and forth. And I have quite a commute, so it's been challenging and get to know new people and new job. But, you know, I think, you know, when you leave with love, you always win. So I'm just trying to sail through with patience, love.
On a tangent now, like, do you think that people view you differently now that you're done your residency and you're a quote-unquote doctor back home working in your hometown living the dream of your doctor? Like, do people look at you and treat you differently now you're back?
I have no idea. I don't know, but definitely you can sense it when people talk to you. People treat you differently when you're a doctor. I mean, there's always a privilege that comes with being a physician. There's no question about that. People give you things you don't even deserve, like just because you're a doctor. Oh man, it's so surreal. Like, I have my name at my office now. I have my own office and I have my name. It says Dr. Salome Radu at the door. And it's like, I come in and I look at that and it's hard not to like shed tears before. it's amazing.
Next time mom is in town, you got to do a picture with mom in front of that.
I took a picture of it.
We've got to get mom in front of that tag, and because that's truly mom's, what she's worked for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got to get her in front of that. I love it. Oh man,
it's so surreal.
And on that transition, I guess with now, you know, yes, you had the dream of being a doctor. You went to med school, graduated med school, did residency. Now you're a fellow. Practicing back home as a fellow. What does your parents and your family feel right now?
I mean, I think they've always been proud of me, you know, and my dad from when I started med school has been calling me Doc. So it's been, nothing's changed on that front, but you know, you can sense the pride that they feel because I'm the first physician in our family. So it's so surreal and it's overwhelming, the pride that they feel and they express to me. So it's I mean, I think that's every Ghanaian parent's dream, and I think they're very proud of me, so I appreciate that. And how does mom and dad feel about you now being the king of the Far East?
Oh man, I think honestly they're super proud, and I think just for, I could just see it in my dad's face, just having the fact that his name, right, his last name, and I'm named after my dad. So having his name being associated with working in a Canadian consulate.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Just thinking about like how he came here, right? Like coming here with no papers as a refugee running from Rawlings, and like having your son being able to not only work for the government, and you know, have a good, but also represent the government abroad
internationally. That is a big deal.
For him, he is super proud. My mom, like I know she's super happy, and she credits herself. She says it's all her prayers. Like, nobody else did it. If it wasn't for her prayers, I wouldn't be where I am. So I better stay on her good side.
She's right. She's absolutely right.
Like, hey, I'll take it.
So I think it's time to revisit the perfection equation, which is, of course, when passion meets purpose, you experience pleasure.
Man.
Would you say that you're in that place in your career?
You know what? I think I said before our last episode I was there. I'm not there anymore. And the reason why is like I'm learning that the more I attain, I want more. So I'm like, I'm at this stage where I'm like, yes, I've attained one of my goals that I wanted to do, but that's not enough for me anymore. Like I have another goal that I've set now that I want to do. So the equation is always stepping stone and moving for me. So I think I was there when like I got the official confirmation that you've been confirmed and you've been, you know, accepted into this role. I was like, whoa. Then right after that, it's what's the next goal? And I think I'm learning, you know, this equation is something that's movable and, you know, changeable from time to time. But what about yourself, Doc?
I think I'm evolving also. Like I'm living a dream. I certainly, I attained my passion. It's time to meet my purpose, which is I want to have, I want to elevate childcare in West Africa.
Wow.
And so that's, if I'm able to do that and change pediatric care in West Africa, I think now I would have been like, okay, I'm there. I can sit back and say, okay, I've done my part. I can now die happy because I'm able to change that. Yeah.
Wow. No, that is exciting. And I think it's amazing. Like I always look at it as we came here as our parents' dream, not just for our families, but our communities back home. And I'm so excited for that dream in you to go back and change, you know, the way pediatric care is done back home. And I'm super excited to see that come to fruition. So when you're ready to launch that, let me know so we can get our investment dollars ready.
Yes, sir. we need to get some of that Chinese dough.
Oh, we'll certainly get some of those, you know, good Chinese investors to come back here. Your great social cause.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Oh man. So Doc, I know, yes, we went out a little bit over this in your first episode of, you know, how do immigrants get there? But maybe if you can go over quickly, like, how do we get, you know, more immigrant kids in becoming doctors and going through, you know, fellowships, and especially in the area of pediatric medicine? How do we get more of them in there?
Well, I think most important thing is the example. Is them being able to see themselves. It's incredible. I think I've said before that watching Dr. Huxtable on The Cosby Show made me think being a doctor can be real. And I loved that he was so human. Like, he was funny. He was real. He had a real family. And he pursued his passion. And that made me think, okay, I can also be a doctor. You know what I mean? Like, I can actually really do this. So I think having people see themselves in another person who's in that position, it's a big deal. So there have been a lot of initiatives to get more Black males to enter into the profession, which I think is great. And so we need to get more people into the STEM programs. And so, you know, again, you don't have to necessarily start with STEM from high school to be able to get into, or university to be able to get into medical school, given that you, provided that you do your prerequisites to be able to apply for whichever school you're applying to. And of course, you go through med school, you go through residency, and then, you know, you can subspecialize into a fellowship that you desire and you want to. Being a pediatrician, you initially, of course, you have to apply into a pediatric specialty. As a residency. And then even within pediatrics, there's subspecialties that you can further specialize into if that's something that you want. If you're young and you got that time on your hands, you know what I mean? Yeah. Wow. It's really up to you.
Well, you don't got to be young.
No, you don't. And you know, young is relative. Young is relative. I say that. So how can someone become a trade commissioner in the
In the Far East. Wow.
Anywhere else in the world, really.
I know, man. So there's two streams in Canada, right? So one stream is the Foreign Service stream, where, you know, every other year, typically the government of Canada will do the Foreign Service exam. And it's usually targeted at, you know, graduates, either undergraduate level or graduate level on any discipline. So you don't have to have a business degree. You have to have some form of post-secondary education, and you can write the Foreign Service exam. That is, I think, the hardest stream to go through, because honestly, I think every year there's, you know, thousands of people who apply, and the tests are ridiculous that you got to do online and even in-person tests. So that's tough. But another stream that you can do is kind of just looking at working for the Trade Commissioner Service and the global affairs and the federal government in general. So looking at federal government jobs, depending on what discipline you are, and especially if you're into international trade and international business, you can either build your skills up to get there by working at a company and getting that skill, that international experience,
yes,
or working for the government and working your way up, right? So the Trade Commissioner Service is always hiring. There's always pools of competition, just looking at the government website, and typically people miss it because they look and say, well, I don't want to apply for these government jobs, I don't know what they are, but right, apply, right, and get your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And what I tell people is, even if it's not your dream job in the government, get your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. And explore. Right. Learn. There's so much learning opportunities in the government. There's so much. It's so encompasses. So you can be working, let's say, for Transportation Canada, And then get your foot in the door and see where the occupation, and then you might be working for Health Canada, right? You don't know where you'll be, but I think if your dream is to, you know, work for the government and maybe do something overseas, get your foot in the door. Trade Commissioner Service directly, it's, you can target, you can even screen your jobs for Global Affairs Canada and get in there. And then honestly, it's really about developing yourselves, working and working hard and being a cut above the rest, right?
Yeah.
But also, I think this would be my side note. If you don't have, if you want to do anything international and you don't have language skills, add that as your career goals to pick up those language skills, right? So I've made my life so much tougher for career progression and for moving around by not being that great in French, right? So it's always tough. It's a setback and it's something that I have to fight. But if you're early on, so if you know your kid has a passion for, you know, international business or stuff like that, then have them, French is mandatory in Canada, have them take it seriously. Yeah. There's so many French opportunities in Canada for them to get bilingual. If your kids are not going to French immersion, I think you're doing a disservice as a parent.
Yeah.
That's just my one advice, that all your, everybody's kids should at least be in French immersion, especially for immigrant kids, because you're already at a disadvantage in a lot of ways that you're battling uphill. So to combat that, you need to be bilingual and set yourself up as well to be able to work in multifaceted areas. So that's kind of in the nutshell how you kind of go about doing that. But it's mainly really building your skills and looking at the opportunities. Do not be afraid to reach out to other trade commissioners. So you can search on LinkedIn and just search for trade commissioners, and a bunch of trade commissioners will pop up on LinkedIn. And reach out to all of them, and a lot of them can help you and walk you through how do you get to that level. Like weekly, I think I talk to different people from all walks of life that are interested in the Trade Commissioner Service, and I'll provide them insight on, you know, how I got here, how they can get here as well.
Wow, that's incredible. So what would you say is next? I mean, it's hard to say what's next when you already haven't landed in Shanghai, but what would you say is next career-wise?
I think next career-wise, I really want to build on this. But as you mentioned, right, like I want to take what I've learned and what I'm building here back home, right, back to Africa, back to emerging markets. Mm-hmm. So I've been working over the last, I would say, couple of months on how do we take what I do on a day-to-day basis as a trade commissioner and kind of the Canadian government does to support Canadian companies to export back home to, you know, West Africa, to Ghana, Nigeria, Sierra Leone, Ivory Coast, to those companies that are looking to export internationally that don't have that support. How do we take that? So, you know, developing some sort of platform for them to get on, to get recognized internationally, to work through, you know, export plans, to connect with people overseas, and just to feel safe and connected in that they can actually compete internationally. So that's where my passion really is right now, that I'm seeing it. So in the next couple of years, I think that's where I want to drive and want, that's next for me, as you mentioned, right? That's where I think I'll be happy, as my passion,
your perfection equation
is kind of taking what I've learned here in my career,
yes,
to help back home.
Absolutely.
That I see as, you know.
I can't wait to see it. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate, you know, your drive and your passions and your desires. And, you know, I pray it all comes true. I can't wait to see it.
Amen. I think I got to submit it to my mom for a prayer.
Yeah, yes.
So she can make this one happen too.
Sprinkle some of those blessings on there.
So I know you touched a little bit about kind of the overall, but what's next for you? You know, I know you talked about the pipeline where you want to see yourself, but I guess what's next for you doing this fellowship and when you're finished?
Yeah, I think I'm just looking to finish, learn as much as I can here while I'm here. And after the fellowship, basically start practice, you know, start seeing kids, helping kids, achieve better wellness, health, and especially, you know, people from our community. Mm-hmm. It's different when you care for people who come from your community, you know, children of people you grew up with. That is,
wow.
That's
surreal.
It's different. That's, yeah, it's so surreal. So that's what I'm looking to do.
Wow.
And then, you know, some years down the line, I'm looking to build alliances to be able to actually go back home and change pediatric care, because Africa is a very young population, and I think that would make a big difference.
Wow. No, that's exciting. Doc, this update has been great. And it's crazy because so much has happened.
I know, right? It's such a short period of time. It's incredible.
And it's amazing. And I think that's a testament to everybody that, like, you know, no matter where you are, like, just sit back and from time to time, use this episode as a point of contact to reflect on where you've been since the last time we chatted about our careers, because you probably further along and you've done some great things than you think you are. And we got to give ourselves credit. So, Doc, thanks.
Shout out to you. Shout out to all the listeners.
Shout out to the listeners for this question, because it was good for us and good therapy for us to kind of do that update.
Absolutely.
Where we're at and where we're going. And I think we might do this, you know, from time to time.
Yeah, we do it ever so often.
Today where we are, right? Because I think
every
that
season
will give us motivation to actually progress and do something.
Yes, right? We have something to say.
Absolutely. So, Doc, phrase of the day. What was it?
Yes, our phrase of the day today was, you know, frudiapa ni piano, which means we push he who climbs the fruitful tree. Mm. That's our saying.
Wow, Doc. Now, that means so much. Like, I think, you know, on the surface, right, it's just we're going to push somebody and support people who are on the right path and doing the right thing, right?
Yes.
And for me, that's where I see our community, especially when we talked about entrepreneurship and in our lives as well. Like, we need to start supporting those with the ideas, those that are doing great things, those that have amazing talents and potentials.
Yeah.
That those are the people that we need to rally around as a community, you know, especially financially. Developing that pool of money. Let's get together and drive some of that into that community and support. Because I think that is the only way we can progress as a community.
Oh, that's incredible. Now that's real. Yeah, I think I 100% agree with that. Paulo Coelho, who is the writer of the book The Alchemist, talks about basically when you choose to pursue your dream, the whole universe basically comes together and helps you along to achieve your goal. It's so incredible that when you set your mind to something, just how many people will help drive you towards your goal. You know, when we started even Doctor on Embarrassment, bro, we had no idea where we were going with this thing. No idea. We just wanted to be able to talk to our people, bring our culture to have other people see it. But it's incredible to see how many people have reached out and said, listen, I can help you do this. I love listening to you guys. Thank you for giving us a voice. You know what I mean? Like, it's incredible. People who hadn't talked to for years reached out to me and said, I'm listening to you and it's inspiring me. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
Pursue your dream. Reach for something good. The whole world will help you, push you in the right direction.
No, I think once you put out something that you want to do, things start aligning and once you start working towards it, you know, you start also even start seeing resources now, even in the clearer light. So I think I love that. So Doc, what did we learn today about one another?
I learned about how women have shaped your life. From the first entrepreneurs that you ever saw, to the miraculous prayers from your mother, which is solely responsible for your career progression, to your strong wife, which I mean, I sort of knew, but I still appreciate. And so I think that's something that I learned.
Wow. Yeah, no, I think I'd never take it in importance of how influential women have been in my life and continue to be in my life, right? And I think that's a salute to all the strong women that have raised me, molded me and kind of continue to support and, you know, mentor me as well.
Yeah. Wow. Shout out to all the ladies.
Man. And for you, Doc, I didn't know you come from a family of hustlers. Like, everybody's an entrepreneur.
Everyone's hustling out here.
man. And yeah, it's crazy. Like, what, you know, you never really think about that. So I know some of your family. I know, you know, some of the careers that they're in and like the professionals that they are. And but you just don't really think about, really entrepreneurship is a big thing. So that means, Doc, that clinic is has to open.
It has to happen. It has to happen. And it's going to happen.
I can't wait for that. I'm super excited. I think we need to probably just start a GoFundMe investment page for this.
Yes.
And have the community doctor and the barrister raise some funds and kind of just kickstart it. This is how we're going to force Doc to just start. We're going to have a boatload of money waiting for him. And he's just going to have to commit to doing it. Or else.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
All right. So I think you've already done this, but 17-year-old Sam, what do you think he would say? Never mind you giving him advice. Oh, what do you think he would say now looking at you?
Man, what would he say? That's insane. He would probably say, I'm glad that I didn't deviate. I'm glad that I didn't deviate, and I'm glad that I didn't sell short the dream, right? The dream of just excellence, right? Because I think the challenge was I never really knew where I wanted to be, but I just knew that I had to keep moving.
Right.
So he would just be happy that I kept moving and I didn't deviate from the plan of excellence. Like, everything that I do, I got to do it with excellence. I got to do it. So I think that just where it'd be. And for you, Doc, what would 17-year-old what would 17-year-old Kwame, Brad Kwame would say to Dr. Sal?
Honestly, I think he would cry tears of joy, you know, to I think he would say, we did it. You know, we did it. Really nothing else. And I think, you know, he would smile, grin ear to ear, just to see where I am now and what I've been able to accomplish. I don't think I sit back and take it in enough, but I think he would smile. I think he'd be very happy.
Amazing. So, Doc, thanks once again for this chat. I think this
thank you, Kamish.
Amazing, you know, for making that time for us, you know, with your busy doctor schedule. We know you doctors are not easy.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. And a big shout out to our listeners and everybody who,
yes,
and all the entrepreneurs we've had on this.
Yeah, season, shout out to all of
season
you.
Season three.
Yes.
It's been amazing learning your stories and your incredible journeys. Yes. And so much more to come, and mm-hmm. look forward to chatting more with more entrepreneurs, more professionals and
yes,
alike as well. This has been one of my favorite seasons, you know.
Absolutely.
We haven't had tons, but this has been an incredible season.
Incredible. And we've been able to record through difficulties, through transitions, through visa pursuits,
through how many multiple countries that
I don't think people fully understand. Exactly. I don't think people fully understand really the transitions that we've been going through while we sit and take time to record. I think it's just a miracle in and of itself.
That it's been. And yeah, I know. And a big shout out to all the guests that have accommodated us.
Yes.
Man, in our particular thank times
you
and all that.
Thank
and,
you.
You know, I think we look forward to growing this. And I think to the listeners and the fans who've supported us from day one and supported this season and made this season a fruition, man, thank you.
Yes.
We're only going to grow this because of you and take as far as you take it.
Yeah. Shout out to the Africa Center making this happen.
Oh, absolutely. Big shout out to them for their support this season. I think it's been an amazing season, and
incredible.
We couldn't have done it without them.
Not at all.
Their support through this season has been amazing and immense mm-hmm. to getting the season and pushing us to the next level as well.
Yes. And the man behind the music, King David, shout out to you.
Super producer David, big shout out to
yes.
you on this season and your support and moving forward. We really, really appreciate your help and
absolutely
your love on this project and keeping the fire going.
Yes. Shout out to our donors. Anybody who donated
absolutely
to make this happen. God bless you.
Yeah, and to all those, and to anybody who's looking to partner with us as we take this to the next level, feel free to reach us out. We'll take anything. Yes. If you want to just donate $1, we'll appreciate that, and that will keep this moving.
Goes a long way.
It goes a long way. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that we do for this. Yes. But what we're committed to do is reach the community, tell our stories, and amplify where we're going as a community and what we can do. And what's possible. That's what we really want to make this podcast about.
Absolutely. We can't wait to give you updates. You know, next time we record, probably we'll be coming from China live from Shanghai.
Absolutely. So thank you so much for being with us. So until next time, guys.
Bye-bye.